Chapter 41. Now Vespasianus, having allowed his army a brief respite after the fatigues of the night, brought them together again soon after daybreak in order to take the city. Now his objective was to draw off the Judean defenders from the breach in the wall. Indeed, with this intention, he had the bravest of his cavalry dismount and marshaled them in three divisions opposite the ruined portions of the wall. Protected by armor from head to foot and with pole arms in hand, they were to be the first to enter the city the moment the machines for the escalade were laid. Now behind them, he placed the flower of the infantry. But as for the remainder of the cavalry, he deployed all of them along the mountainous region facing the walls in order to prevent the escape of even a single fugitive when the city was taken. Now further in the rear, he posted the archers in a semicircle, directing them to have their arrows ready to shoot. But he also gave the same directions to the slingers and the machine operators. Now other parties were then ordered to bring up ladders and to plant them against the wall where it remained intact. Indeed, so that some of the besieged Judeans, in their attempt to repel the Romans' escalade, might be induced to abandon the defense of the breach. But that the remainder, overwhelmed by a hail of missiles, might be forced to give way, affording his men entrance into the city. But when I discovered this contrivance, I indeed entrusted the protection of the intact portions of the wall to the fatigued and older men, expecting that no harm would reach them there. But at the breach in the wall, I placed the most vigorous of my men, and at the head of each group, six men were selected by lot. And among these, I selected for myself the place to bear the brunt of the danger. I also directed,
"Indeed, when the Legion raises their war cry, stop your ears so that you will not be frightened. But when the multitude of missiles comes, crouch down. Cover yourselves with your oblong shields. Also, fall back for a while until the archers have emptied their quivers. But the instant the machines are laid for the escalade, leap onto them yourselves and confront our foes by means of their own weapons. Also, let each man contend not to save his own fatherland, but instead as its avenger, as though it were already lost. Also, let each man himself imagine the slaughter of the old men and the fate of children and women at the hands of the impending enemy. And let the anticipation of these threatened calamities arouse each man's concentrated fury. Let him spend it upon the would-be perpetrators."
Therefore, by these means, I indeed dispose my two divisions. But when a multitude of non-combatant citizens, the women and little ones, saw their city encircled by a triple phalanx, for none of the guards which the Romans had originally posted for the battle were removed. But when they saw their foes at the foot of the ruined walls, with short swords in hand, and above them the mountainous region gleaming with weapons, and higher still, the arrows in the hands of the Arabian archers, they shrieked aloud a final shriek of their capture, as though the catastrophe were no longer imminent, but had instead already come upon them. But afraid that the wailing of the women might unman the combatants, I indeed ordered them to be shut up in their houses, directing them with threats to hold their peace. But I took up my allotted position at the breach. Therefore, indeed, I disregarded the ladders which were being brought up elsewhere, but breathlessly awaited the impending shower of projectiles. But now, both the trumpeters of all the legions simultaneously sounded their trumpets, and the army raised a terrible sound. And at a given signal, arrows poured from all quarters, intercepting the light. Yet truly, my party, mindful of my orders, both stopped up their ears from the shout and covered their bodies from the arrows. And since the machines were ready to work, my party dashed out onto them before those who had placed them could set foot on them. Now in the ensuing grappling of our ascending foes, my party exhibited all manner of actions in hand and in soul, endeavoring in the depth of calamity to prove themselves no bit inferior to men who, without the same interests at stake, were so courageous. So not one Judean relaxed his struggle with a Roman until he had utterly destroyed his enemy or fell down himself. But indeed, the Judeans were growing exhausted by the incessant combat and had none to replenish their foremost fighters. While in the Roman ranks, the exhausted men were relieved by fresh troops. And when one party was driven back, another instantly took its place. The Roman assailants both cheered each other on, and indeed, side linked to side, but with their oblong shields protecting them from above, they formed an unbreakable column. And with its united mass, like one solid body, it thrust the Judeans before them and already began to mount the wall. Now in this critical situation, I, taking necessity as my counselor, ready as she is in invention when stimulated by despair, directed boiling oil to be poured upon this roof of close-locked oblong shields. Now my men had it ready, and at once flooded the Romans with large quantities from all quarters. Then they flung their vessels down upon them, still hissing from the heat of the fire. This dispersed their formation. And the Romans, burning and in excruciating agony, rolled headlong down from the wall. For indeed, the oil instantaneously penetrated beneath their full suits of armor from head to foot, spreading over the whole surface of their bodies and devouring the flesh like the fierceness of a flame. For the nature of this liquid made it quick to absorb heat, and its fatty properties made it slow to cool. But encumbered with their breastplates and their helmets, the victims had no escape from the scalding oil. But leaping and writhing in anguish, they dropped from the bridges which they had laid. But those who turned to flee were blocked by their comrades who were pressing forward for the assault, and were easily wounded by those who were behind them. But in the midst of these trials, the Romans showed no lack of fortitude, nor did the Judeans lack resourcefulness. Instead, the Romans, though they saw their own comrades in tortures from the drenching oil, were still vehemently bent against those who poured it, each cursing the man in front of him for impeding the charge. But the Judeans, on their side, invented a second cunning contrivance to hinder their accession. They poured boiled fenugreek over the planks on which the Romans slipped, stumbling backward. And so, whether attempting to retreat or to advance, not a man could remain on his feet. Indeed, some collapsed backwards upon the machines on which they ascended and were crushed underfoot. But many fell down onto the earthworks, but they were struck by Judean arrows. For, in consequence of the Romans being unable to maintain their footing, the Judean defenders, relieved from hand-to-hand fighting, were able to shower them with arrows. Now toward evening, after having sustained severe losses in this assault, the general called off the soldiers. But no few Romans fell, and a greater amount were wounded. But the Yodfot defenders, indeed, had only 6 deaths. But at least 300 were carried off wounded. This pitched battle indeed occurred on the 20th day of the month, Dicaeus. Now at first, when Vespasiano sought to console his army for their recent experiences, he found them furious and calling, not for encouragement, but instead for action. Indeed, he directed them to raise the height of the embankments, but to construct 3 towers, each 50 feet high, that should be covered entirely with sheet iron, both to ensure their stability by their weight and to render them fireproof. He had these towers erected upon the earthworks. Also upon them, he mounted both the javelin throwers and the archers, and the most robust of the slingers, as well as the lighter artillery. These troops, being screened from view by the height of the towers and their parapets, opened fire on the besieged Judeans, who were plainly visible to them on the wall. now the Judeans, found no means of avoiding the projectiles aimed at their heads, nor of avenging themselves on an unseen enemy. And indeed, they perceived that these lofty towers were inaccessible to hand-tossed missiles and protected against fire by their sheet iron. So, they abandoned the wall and made sallies against any who attempted to renew the assault. And this was how Yodfot continued to hold out, while day by day, many of its defenders fell. And powerless to retaliate against their foes, they could not keep them at bay without endangering themselves.